views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hello, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I am really excited to have Chuck Blakeman with us. And Chuck and I are going to be talking about the participation age, a new frontier in culture. So let me introduce Chuck. He is a best-selling author, an entrepreneur, and world-renowned business advisor. He writes weekly Inc. magazine articles and has a TED Talk on the emerging work world. Chuck's first book, Making Money is Killing Your Business, was named the number one rated business book of the year. And his most recent book, Why Employees Are Always a Bad Idea, has been named top 10 business book of the year. Both are required reading with several university MBA and entrepreneurial programs. Chuck started and built 11 businesses in 25 years in the U.S. and internationally, and now uses his experience to help business owners and executives create success. His company, Crankset Group, inspires and transforms your approach to business and your future. Chuck is a rare combination of successful business owner, speaker, and author who inspires leaders and provides simple tools to transform their business. Welcome, Chuck.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Claudette. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, likewise. Looking forward to it. So the question I have right off the bat, and I'm sure listeners probably do as well, is we all pretty much know what the industrial age is, but what is the participation age? What are we talking about when we say that?
Yeah, it's a great question. People think the industrial age is over. It's not. We've switched out the smokestacks and assembly lines for things like clean rooms and digital technology. Uh-huh. But the front office looks exactly like it did in 1904 with guys in ties making decisions for everybody else. So the organization, the way we organize and run business hasn't changed in probably 150 to 175 years since the early 1800s, really into the mid 1800s on through. We had this funny thing called the factory system. Mm-hmm. And that was the pinnacle of the what we thought was the industrial age, but the factory system, the way we run businesses was developed in the factory system. And even the most seemingly progressive businesses, the large majority of them are running their businesses just like somebody in 1898. They're dehumanized. And that was really the crux of the industrial age, is it took work which was meaningful. Mm-hmm. And where people actually didn't separate their personal lives or their work lives. They were integrated, and work was meaningful, and it took years to figure it out, and you were highly responsible. You made lots of decisions. If I was a shoemaker, I spent 5 or 6 or 8 years apprenticing with someone else for the sole purpose of going out and starting my own shoe shop. And right around 1850 or 1870, you kicked me out of that, you forced me out of that, and you put me into a sweatshop. Where I put now I put a nail in the left boot and I pass it to the guy beside me, and I do that for 12 hours, 6 days a week. Mm. Completely dehumanized work took all the humanity out of it. Mm-hmm. And the participation age is basically the opposite. The objective of the participation age is to rehumanize work and rehumanize the workplace by giving everybody their brain back.
Mm. I love that part, giving everybody their brain back. Yeah.
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 Yeah, we think, you know, people say, well, doesn't everybody at work have a brain? No. The statistics would say that they don't. I watch this stuff every month. Gallup right now, Gallup says 32% of people are engaged at work. That means almost 70% are phoning it in. That's not a brain. Nope. 51% have their resumes out on the street right now, actively pursuing another job, not engaged. And 86% say, I have yet to find something I love doing. Mm. That's just criminal.
It is.
You went into shoemaking in 1798 because it sounded interesting to you and you thought you could give your life to it and you loved doing it. And now 86% of people are wandering around the work landscape disengaged and looking for the next opportunity because it's not fun. So I would say that very few people have a brain today.
And it seems like if you do have a brain at work, you may have worked really, really hard to be able to use it, right? There's something you've done to find your passion.
Hmm? Yeah, usually you get a brain because you started the business, but more often than not, if you have a brain at work, you get penalized. You know, think of Scott Adams. Mm-hmm. People say, who's Scott Adams? Well, he's the guy who created Dilbert. Scott Adams has made millions on the premise that we all know that managers aren't smarter than us, but we have to make sure they think they are. Mm-hmm. And that's the premise of Dilbert. If I'm actually bringing my brain to work and I come to work with solutions, that is a threat to the person who is supposed to be the person who has all the solutions. So my job is to try and figure out how to make it their solution, make them come up with the idea, make them look smart. And it's the old adage, I use this probably at least once a week. When I'm around managers, I get the feeling they are important. When I'm around leaders, when I'm around leaders, I get the feeling I am important. And that's the seminal difference between the participation age and the industrial age. Who is being important here? Is it the manager who I exist to serve, mm-hmm. or is it the leader who exists to serve me?
What an amazing distinction. Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, you know, why haven't we shifted, right? Why are we still stuck in this industrial age where people look the same as they have for 150 years?
Yeah. Work? Well, yeah. I traced this. It's a really fascinating thing. I traced management and leadership back throughout history and found they come from very different places. The first mention of management that I could find is in Hammurabi's code, and he talks about managing slaves, lording over slaves, people who don't want to work. The only way you can get them to work is to stand over them with a whip and a gun or a bow and arrow, whatever they had at the time. Mm-hmm. And you trace management, it goes from slavery to serfdom to the conscripted military to the full military to the industrial age factory system straight out of the military right into HR. And that's mm-hmm. our history of management. Leadership comes from society, from awakening, from culture, from participation, from democracy, from all these things we choose. Mm-hmm. They come from very different places and are very different things. I write for Inc. And one of the articles I wrote three or four years ago was managers and leaders have nothing in common. And that is the truth. We got to get rid of managers that come in that are part of the factory system, and we have to figure out what leadership is separate from management. Very different things.
That is fascinating. I had not ever thought about or heard that kind of, you know, where, like you said, you trace back, right? Managing was managing slaves, you know, serfdom, et cetera, on down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's fascinating.
Wow. Wow.
It's interesting. We've gotten to the point where since the factory system came in place, we've conflated management and leadership to the point where you ask even supposed experts, they won't be able to tell you the difference. They'll basically say, well, you know, way over here on the left, this is leadership. Way over here on the right, that's management. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff in the middle that's the same. Nothing. I've got great slides on this and great research. There is nothing that they have in common. And we've conflated the two to the point where we don't know what they are anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that we don't know what they are anymore. And circling back to what you mentioned about Scott Adams and Dilbert, right? And that he's a multimillionaire based on this idea that we have to pretend that managers know more than we do. And he's very funny. And this, you know, and you said that, I'm like, yeah, how many times, I do a lot of executive coaching in addition to consulting, has someone come to me and said, you know, Claudette, can you help me figure out how to manage up, right? I just, my manager's not very effective and I need to, you know, but they're not very open to my ideas.
Yeah.
And it just, as you said that, I thought, not that I ever thought that was great anyway, but it just hit me. Wow, that's ridiculous.
So here's one quick stat on that. What I saw, and this is probably 6 or 8 years old, I'm assuming it's not much different. 50% of a manager's time is spent managing the manager above them, not being effective. 50%.
Wow. Yeah.
Just trying to brown nose and manage up. Mm-hmm. And how dumb is that? We work with organizations that make this transition from the industrial age to the participation age. And one of the things we ask them to do is eliminate all managers. Managers need to go. My first book or my second book is called Why Employees Are Always a Bad Idea. And the original working title was Why Managers Are Always a Bad Idea, because that is the crux of the manager. We can replace 10 managers with one leader, let the adults have their brains back. And the organizations that do that grow faster, have higher profits, higher productivity, and people stay exponentially longer because they got their brains back. But it is that managing up thing. We call it the management tax, both on the time of the organization and on the money of the organization. It's stupefying what we spend on people who add nothing to the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, too, that I'm struck by as you're talking about this is, are there organizations in which you say you're working with them, right? You go in and work with them and you're saying, we're going to eliminate managers and this is what we need to do. Do you ever have people say, we don't want our brains back? Like, we want to just keep kind of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is you hit on it, Claudia. You're obviously very sharp in this stuff. You do this a lot because that is seminal to the issue. I call it, if we were to call management what it truly is, everyone would be embarrassed to do it. This is management, 100% codependence.
Yeah.
It's all the manager needs someone to tell what to do because that's how he or she adds value to the world around them. I solve and decide and I tell. Mm-hmm. The worker gets used to that, has enough responsibilities at home, kind of likes the idea of just going to work and turning their brain off, just tell me what to do. And they actually, a significant minority of people will actually want to be told what to do. And the rest of them will be glad to be told what to do because they don't want to lose their job making a suggestion because that threatens the manager. So the manager looks at this and says, see, look at all these unmotivated people. They wouldn't work without me. And our response is this. Management makes people stupid and lazy. They are not stupid and lazy. We make them that way. It is the after effect of the assumption that they are stupid and lazy that makes them that way. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is. Wow. Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it is rampant, right? It is everywhere.
It is rampant.
It is rampant everywhere. Yeah.
95% of businesses are still stuck in what we would call the factory system hierarchy with this top-down thing where the people at the bottom exist to serve the people at the top. And there's all kinds of assumptions about that none of which could be proved to be true. But the assumption is those people need, first of all, they're stupid and lazy, or some form and variation of that, and they need smart, motivated people to make them work. That comes right out of Frederick Winslow's paper from 1911 called Scientific Management. And then there's the assumption that they don't deserve anything more than that. The reality of it is, if we treated them all like human beings, gave them their brains back, gave them the ability to make decisions, removed these people with whips over them, the companies that do that, again, grow faster, have higher profits, have higher productivity, and people stay exponentially longer. So even if your motivation is you think this works better, there's no data that supports you doing it. And yet we're still doing it. And we need to get into why.
Yeah. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into why. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Stay juicy. tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you have been struggling with fear and anxiety, you know how debilitating these emotions can be. You constantly doubt yourself, you can't make decisions, and feel more and more insecure and stuck. Dr. Friedman Schaub's book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, will provide you with the insights and tools to break through these challenges. Through a step-by-step process, Dr. Schaub explains how to resolve the subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety and build a strong foundation of inner peace and confidence. Visit www.thefearandanxietysolution.com and get your copy now.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Chuck Blakeman, who is an author, speaker, and entrepreneur. And we are talking about the age of participation versus the industrial age. So, Chuck, we were just talking about how, this is so important, right? 95% of organizations still are using managers to tell people what to do, right? And that yes. Then think because people aren't doing what they need to be doing, there's something wrong with those people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a, we come by it honestly. I don't want to beat managers themselves up because you're born into this system. You think this is the way we've always worked with people. When in reality, it was a shock to me to look back 15 or so years ago. I'm left-handed, right-brained, ADHD and dyslexic. I went to music school. So I don't get business from the traditional sense. I just did what worked. And I built 11 businesses in eight industries on four continents, just doing what worked. And my friends began to come to me and say, hey, can you help us? And so I had to look back and say, well, if I lead them down this trail, am I getting them into something really stupid? And so I looked at the history of this thing and realized, wow, it's been such a short period in time where we've treated people like this outside of slavery and serfdom in the military. People weren't managed like this until we got them into factories. And all of a sudden, we think this is normal. So I call that factory system a pimple on the face of business. And we got to get some clear sail and get back to where we're going. People listen to listen to me talk and read my books, and they think, this guy's way out there. Look how futuristic or how nutty this stuff is. And if you don't get anything else out of this podcast, get this out of it. I'm not advocating anything new. I'm simply advocating that we go back where we came from before the factory system.
An important point, right? That this has existed already. What you're talking about
is not new stuff. Yeah. People had their brains. 80%+ of, just to give you, there's tons of data on this. 80%+ of people throughout the history of the world, free people throughout the history of the world, have owned their own business. Until we got into the factory system, and now it's 15%. It's in our DNA to make decisions and to be responsible adults. And then I can give you laterally companies in the landscape of America, a few hundred very large ones and thousands of smaller ones that are racing toward this idea of what we call the participation age in the emerging work world, because they know that it makes sense both altruistically and capitalistically. It makes sense.
It makes sense. It's not, it's when you put it this way, it's just very, it's logical.
It is logical. Well, it's but it's counterlogical in some ways, because we've seen, well, why would I do this? Look at Giant Corporation Incorporated. We're already making money. We're doing fine without this nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to rock the boat. I get that. That's one of the major reasons we don't do this. We don't like change. You know, you want to go into that. That's a fun subject. But, you know, the pneumatic hammer was first invented in like the late 1890s. We finally started using to put in floors in 2012 or something. I mean, we don't like change. If it's working, if we perceive that it's working, then why fix it? That's not the right question. The question is, would it work better? Would you make even more money? Would people be even happier? Would you have less turnover if you did it this way? And so it takes, in some cases, it's altruistic people who catch on to this first. Hey, I know that putting a nut on a bolt is dehumanizing. Let's figure out how we can bring the humanity back in that. And then later on, people catch on to it because they realize the data is there to make more money doing this. I have an ongoing Twitter conversation with a few people, but Tom Peters seems to be the one I talk to the most who doesn't like this idea of distributed decision-making and self-management and getting rid of managers. And the conversation for the last year and a half has basically been, Tom makes an emotional statement, this can't work or that's dumb, and I respond with data. And he responds with emotional, and I respond with data. There is no data that supports that we should be managing people, none. There's an assumption, and no one has ever tested it. The assumption is that if you are not there, productivity will go down. And the reality of it is, in every company where that's not true, productivity is higher. Where in every company where there's not managers, productivity, responsibility, clear delegation of authority, all of that stuff is better off when they're not there.
And so what, you know, one of the things you talk about in your book is the diseases of the business diseases of the industrial age. And I know we're probably already talking about some of them right now.
But you know, I wanted to outline these because I wanted people to see that this stuff came from somewhere, and we need to understand that I didn't make this stuff up. That there's all these diseases of the industrial age that we've drug into modern business with us. For instance, the problem of big, the concept, the very terminology of big business did not enter the business lexicon until the 1950s. Mm. There's always been a stray giant corporation here and there, Hudson Bay Company and things like that. But as a thing, big wasn't why people went into business. And that's important because one of the things I'm writing about a lot is the difference between industrialism and capitalism. I'm about to put out an Inc. article where the title is going to be, you just think you hate capitalism, but you don't. What you hate is industrialism. One of the hallmarks of industrialism is big for the sake of big. Let's become Rockefeller, Standard Oil Company, whatever it is, Microsoft. Let's be big for the sake of big, not because it serves anybody. That is very new in the history of man, to be big for the sake of big. That's one of the diseases, and it causes all kinds of problems. 21st century industrialists is another disease where industrialism itself is based actually on Marxism and socialism.
Interesting. Yeah.
If you look at the Russian constitution before the socialists got in place, it looks pretty much like ours. Freedom of speech and opportunity and all that stuff. And what they meant by that was, we want that stuff until we get in power, and then we don't want anybody else to have it. And they shut it all down. And that's exactly what industrialism does. They all say capitalism, free markets, freedom of speech. But then you look at every giant corporation and they spend half their energy trying to get the next guy, keep the next guy from actually getting there. Mm-hmm. That's industrialism. That's not capitalism. A third one is the concept of employees. employee comes from slavery. We want to replace that with stakeholders who choose to be part of a great company, who want to participate in building the great company and want to share in the results. And we've already talked about managers. That's another disease. The idea of 9 to 5, working from 9 to 5. What a dumb idea, but it comes directly out of the factory system. All the research shows that human beings work in spurts. We work in 90-minute increments. And then if we had a half hour, 45 minutes, or even an hour and a half to go ride our bicycle or go jump in a pool, then we work another hour and a half. We're going to get more done in that time than doing it on a daily basis. The research shows the average person works somewhere between 3.5 to 5.5 hours every day because they need those breaks. And yet we stick them in these cubicles from 9 to 5 and say, be productive. Just a dumb idea. Another thing we drug into the new world from the industrial age was the separation of work and play. For thousands of years, I played where I worked. I worked where I played. And we separated the two. And now we have this stupid thing called balance. When what we should really have is integration.
Right.
So I call people in our business at 10 o'clock in the morning and she'll say, sorry, I didn't pick up. I was walking the dog. Well, of course you were, because that's when the dog needs to be walked. But then I'll also call her at 7 and 9. She'll say, yeah, what do you need? And we just work in the rhythms that work for us. Mm-hmm. And that's just something we've lost. And then retirement is one of the other big diseases. The whole concept was invented by Otto von Bismarck in 1882 to get people off of machines who weren't as productive. And he forced retirement on them and they rioted. Retirement is a dumb idea. It doesn't mean we should be tied to a machine for our whole lives. But the message on retirement is you retire your brain at 65. And one of the subtitles in my book is called Death by Golf. Because the research shows that if people who retire at 50 are more likely to die at 60 than people who retire at 60 are to even die at 70. We are not made to do and to be something significant for 2/3 of our life and go out to pasture. The research is stunning on this. Two-thirds of all the people in the history of the world who have ever made it to 65 years old are alive right now. Growing older is something we don't understand. We've come up with some really bad ideas on how to handle it, and retirement is the worst one. Scientists say the first person to live to 150 has already been born, and I plan to live to 120. What is this retirement thing? You know, when you retire, you die. That's the death by golf thing. The average individual, the average male died at 18 months after retiring, and female 36. Stick a fork in me, I'm done, is one of the worst diseases of the industrial age.
And it's also, it strikes me too, how so many people work, right, at jobs they don't like, as you just described, you know, without their brains, just so they can retire. Like, oh, finally, I'm done.
And that was actually invented after World War II. For 70 years, people hated retirement, resisted it. Sometime in the World War II or afterwards, somebody got the brainiac idea to repackage retirement. Because before, retirement was, you're old, you're irrelevant, you're done. And now they came up with this new package. Hey, let's replace work with play. That sounded attractive. We've had a number of generations try it. Here's the data. Something around over 70% of people over the age of 65 are going back to work, and only 18% of them because they think they need more money. It's because they need more meaning. It's a lie. We shouldn't retire our brains any more than we should retire our bodies. When you stop exercising, your body atrophies. When you stop using your brain atrophies, and you die.
Oh, wow. It's so completely true, and it's so logical. Let's take a quick break. Yeah, this is Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to talk more about what do leaders need to do to shift into a participation age mindset. We'll be right back.
Find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Winning at the game of money. Lynn Brown is now offering Full Spectrum Finance, a progressive 12-month program that will help you to navigate through the mechanics of financial expansion. Finally, a financial planner who looks at the full spectrum of money and abundance. Engage you in the mental, physical, and energetic aspects of finance. This is Full Spectrum Finance. Are you ready to get into it? For more information, go to fullspectrumfinance.com.
Tune in to the hit show, Raging Skillet Radio, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Everybody, we're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is Chuck Blakeman, and we are talking about this transition from industrial age to participation age and everything that has gone into that. And Chuck, you've been really filling us in to just a really exciting and interesting extent on the research and, you know, how we've sort of gone wrong, it sounds like, right, in our work, perceptions about work and what we can do to get back on track.
Yeah, it's a transition we need to make. And the question is, you know, how do leaders make this transition? And the first thing is in their heads.
Yeah.
Your beliefs determine your destiny. If I believe people are smart and motivated, I value them as that, and I try and keep them. If I believe people are stupid and lazy, just to give you one dichotomy, then I value them little, and I find them replaceable, and I get other people, and off we go, and it's a descending self-fulfilling prophecy in either direction. Mm-hmm. This isn't new stuff again. Douglas McGregor wrote a book in 1960 called The Human Side of Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And in that book, he postulated Theory X, Theory Y, based on Frederick Taylor's paper from 1911. And in his paper, Taylor said, the average, quote unquote, the average, well, he defined people as stupid and lazy. The average worker is stupid and lazy. So McGregor took that and said, Theory X, Theory Y. Theory X, people are stupid and lazy. Theory Y, people are smart and motivated. Then he looked at companies in the very same industry who believed those two opposite things. The leaders on one page said, yeah, you know, most people are unmotivated or they're stupid or they're a combination. And all of their people were stupid and lazy. Then you looked at the people in the other organizations where the leaders said, no, most people really do want to work. We believe that. And we're going to require that. And we're going to expect that. And most people are really smart. We're going to require them and expect them to use their brains. And gee, what a surprise. Everybody in those companies are smart and motivated. So the first thing is inside our heads. Do you really, truly believe that the overwhelming majority of people are smart and motivated and do not need to be managed. They need to be given vision, guidance, mentoring, training, resourcing, all the things leaders do, but they don't need to be managed. If you don't believe that, you're dead in the water. So the first thing we have to do is check our own beliefs. Do I really believe in the Dilbert Society, or do I believe that people can be smart and motivated? And I can give you so many companies where that's true that there's no longer, it's not like there's an anomaly here. The data set is too strong. It's true, and it's true that we make people stupid and lazy. I'll give you an example, a graphic example of this mindset belief shift, because that's the first thing. Many people have heard of David Marquette. He inherited a submarine. He wrote a book called Turn the Ship Around. And he inherited a submarine from a guy who thought everybody on the ship was stupid and lazy, and he treated them that way. Mm-hmm. He decided and told. That's what he did. That's what managers do. Leaders ask, deciders or managers tell. And he told everybody what to do. And for 3 years running, while that guy was the captain of that ship, it was the worst rated submarine in the U.S. Navy. David Marquette inherited that same crew and in 1 year turned it into the best rated submarine in the Navy. And here's the kicker. Mm-hmm. He did it with the same 134 people that had made it the worst. What changed? The leader's mindset. One leader said, you guys are stupid and lazy, and I will treat you that way, and I will prove that that's true. And the next guy came in and said, all right, guys, here's how we're going to change this. I am no longer going to tell anybody on this boat what to do. I'm instituting what we call leader. There is no more manager follower. It's now leader. You will lead me in your areas of expertise, and you'll come to me and say, here's what I intend to do. And my job will just be to ask hard questions and see if I can poke any holes in what you came up with. And if I can't, then I'm just going to go say, make it so. So on that one thing, he gave everybody their brains back because they now have distributed decision making. And on that one thing, in 1 year, the same 134 people turned that into the best submarine in the U.S. Navy. The problem isn't outside your head. The problem is in your head. If you have a business full of people who are stupid and lazy, it's because you and a combination of others have very subtly over the years believed that, and you've made it come true. And we can give you all sorts of tools for how to get out of that morass. But that's the first thing, is to believe that you can do it differently, that people actually are smart and motivated. And then here's the key practice, distributed decision making. The art of leadership is to know how few decisions the leader needs to make. Mm-hmm. The art of management is to know how many decisions I can make. I never get out of the decision making. Managers make decisions. Leaders train other people to make decisions, and then they get the blankety blank out of the way. Distributed decision making is the core practice of rehumanizing the workplace, which makes sense because that is the number one thing that makes me different than animals, is I get to look at stuff creatively and solve problems, and that makes me human. So let's distribute the decision making and watch the fire burn throughout the organization.
Yeah, and I love that. And so when, you know, you've worked with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of leaders, and so when you're working with them and you bring this idea, right, like, okay, it's mindset, right? You need to change your mindset on this for this to all work.
Yep.
Do you hit resistance? What have been the range of responses to that?
Yeah, it is a wide range of resistance. Yeah. And I hit resistance on different levels. A lot of the times it's sort of in the middle where they say, oh, no, this totally makes sense. And they see the numbers. Hey, we'll make more money. Our productivity will go up. We'll have people stupefyingly better retention. I'm talking in the grocery industry, one company, the average is 38% turnover. Theirs is 3% a year. Stupefyingly better data. So they look at this and say, man, this is great. I totally buy off on this. But what they're really saying, and it took me a while to get to this, a few years to realize that there's two kinds of beliefs. Mm-hmm. There's the mental belief, there's the cognitive belief, and then there's the intuitive belief. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say in their heads, hey, this is great, let's do it. But in their hearts yet, they really haven't gotten all the way to where they live it out. So I love this. Yes, we're going to do distributed decision making. And then you find them continuing to manage, micromanage, control, keep making decisions for other people. They just can't help themselves because there's 200 years worth of this and they've done it for 60 years. It's a bad habit.
Yeah, and that's, I think, such a key point, isn't it? It has to move from the cognitive to the emotional. right? Yeah. The heart level. Yeah. Or you kind of, you internalize it. Like, I get this, you know, inside of who I am.
Yeah. You can't see me right now, but I'll use my finger to point in two different places. I believe this. Mm-hmm. I'm pointing at my head. I believe this. I'm pointing at my heart. And until you can do that, it's not going to change.
Yeah. And I love the submarine story, right? You know, this leader to leader idea. We're not managers and followers, we're not leaders and followers. It's leader to leader, right?
Yeah. Yep. Why would I tell the cook how to run the galley on the sub? I don't know much, if anything, about that. He's in touch with it every day. He should tell me how he's going to run the galley. And then my only responsibility is to ask whatever questions I could until I can't poke holes in what he's going to do. And that's leadership. Leadership asks, management tells.
And I think we hear that a lot. Leadership, you know, leadership's asked, management tells. But my experience has been that's also what needs to get down to the heart level, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because there's a lot of telling. Yeah.
Yeah, we believe that in our heads, but do we really live that way? That's how you know that it's not in your head anymore, is that it comes out intuitively in the way you live out in front of the people around you, as you reflexively begin to ask questions. When you have a statement you want to make, you think, how can I form that as a question to train them on how to think, to give them their brains back, to show my trust, to demonstrate that I can't be the person who you become codependent on, that we'll all be better off if we're all adults.
So one of the things I'm curious about is, as you've worked with leaders and the ones who go, you know, get it at the heart level and they go through the process with you and your organization, in the transformational process in their organization. And what are some of the things they say? I know it's never done, but once they've made it through that initial hurdle, right, that initial arc, and they've redistributed, you know, decision making, and people have their brains back, and that's in place. What's some of the feedback you get?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, undying gratitude and coulda, shoulda, woulda, like, holy crap, I did it this way for 30 years. What was I thinking? Remorse, apologetic, the first great step. You know that it's going to work when the leader goes to everybody else in the organization and says, going forward, starting today, we're gonna join the emerging work world of the participation age, and we're gonna get involved in everyone participating in building a great company, and everyone sharing in the result of that. And the first thing I want to do is apologize for having led you down the other path for the last however many years I've been doing this. And it doesn't have to be a guilty apology. And usually it's not. It's an apology that says, I'm sorry I led you down here, but frankly, it's all I knew what to do.
Right.
I inherited this system. I thought it was the only way to run a business. I didn't know any better. And now my eyes have been opened. We've got somewhere else we can go where everybody's going to have a brain. We're all going to be happier. You guys are going to stick around. We're going to make meaning instead of just making money. We're going to do all this great stuff. And I'm with you, but you need to know that I feel badly. For what we did. I don't feel badly in a guilt sense. You know, I did what I thought I could do, but now I know something new. I'm sorry for where we've been, but this is no longer an option. We're going somewhere new.
Yeah. And that's when you know, right? And that's when you know.
Yeah. You know that they've actually bought in, because they're one of many. And the first thing we talk about, if we want to get into practicals here, the first thing that should come out of that person's mouth is, for instance, I am no longer the boss. BOSS is a four-letter word. No one is ever allowed to use that here again. There will be no more bosses. That is a slavery, serfdom, military term. We will no longer use it because it's demeaning, dehumanizing, and you won't work as well or better with it. There is a boss. It's not a human being. It's our mission statement. Mm-hmm. And as well as you knew your boss to suck up to your boss, you knew their kids, you knew what they liked for dinner, you know what they laughed at. You need to become that passionate about our mission statement. I now serve that boss. You now serve that boss. We all serve at the pleasure of the boss. If you ever catch me not serving the boss, you have the right and the requirement to help me get back on track. And when I see you not serving the boss, I have the right and the requirement to get you back on track. You can see how this levels the playing field in such a positive way. Now, instead of coming to me and saying, boss, what should I do? first response is, I'm not your daddy. I'm not your boss. Who's your boss? And what do you think that boss would like you to do? Let's do all of our question asking, all our training around, does this get our mission done? And I'm going to be passionate about that. You're going to be passionate about that. Let's all rally around that. And we will hire and we will fire and we will operate based on the mission statement, not on who your boss is. No politics, none of that crap. We're all in it together.
So we're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, Chuck, how can people find you? I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who are, you know, really interested to learn more. What are the best ways for them to do that?
Yeah, ChuckBlakeman.com. We try and make it easy. So Chuck,
oh, okay. Blake,
B-L-A-K-E-M-A-N, ChuckBlakeman.com. We have a lot of other things going on, but that would be the place they'd go to search for us first. And we do business advisory through that site, and we do a lot of other things with organizations as well as with leaders and that kind of stuff. So that would be the place to start is ChuckBlakeman.com.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. So we are going to take a quick break, and this is Claudette Rowley on Cultural Brilliance Radio. When we come back, we're going to keep talking a little more about recommendations and some practical ways that you can help your organization move into the participation age. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
The Janice Underwood Show, helping you create the life you want, not the life you tolerate. Tune in each Monday, 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as Janice delves into the life creator system and the next step in your spiritual evolution. Janice Underwood is gifted at helping spiritually minded people shift their mindsets to unleash the creator within. Our souls wish to wake us up. Those of us listening hear the call. Do you? For more information, visit JaniceUnderwood.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with Chuck Blakeman. And Chuck, we were just starting to talk about some of the really practical ways, right? Organizations can start to move into the participation age. And you were just talking about this idea of there are no more bosses, right? The mission statement is the driving force.
And so let me make sure that people don't understand or don't hear me saying that you should go back after you listen to this podcast, you should go back and stand in front of all your people and say, all the managers are fired and I'll be on the golf course. You're now all adult stakeholders. That's not what we're talking about. That's what we call, that's not leadership. That's abdication.
So we don't come
from management to leadership or to abdication. And the principle here is basically the way you make the shift is it's replacement therapy. You don't take something away to give something new. You put the new thing in place and then they see the old thing is irrelevant. So Google is a great example of this. In 2005, they declared the end of all managers. Mm-hmm. Dumbest thing they'd ever done.
Yep.
Three months later, they said, whoops, we're reeling it all back in. Just kidding. And the reason it was such a disaster is because they said, we're taking something away. Now you figure out what to put in its place.
Mm.
Really a dumb idea. What they should have done first, instead of saying anything about taking away managers, they should have said, we're introducing a new concept where managers are going to become leaders and we're all going to help them do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, as people quit or moved on, you wouldn't need to replace them because you find that they really aren't adding that much value. And you would end up keeping, after eight or nine of them quit, the 10th one is actually a leader that you can hang on to because you need one leader for every 10 managers. So this is a gradual thing. It's a replacement therapy sort of thing. And the way we do this is we've come up with tools. And we don't have it's not like a 1-2-3 step process that fits every company. They're all snowflakes. But here's like 35 things you can do to build a participation age company without managers where people have self-managed teams that they work with. And there's a core 11 things that we've come from that are all designed around giving people something new that they would be excited about having that over time begins to erode away the need for a manager. And to some point after 6 months, or a year or a year and a half, you look around and say, really, why is that person still here? Because you no longer need them. Rather than this person's going to disappear and now you have to fill the void. So simple things like the leader, that's the first thing that has to go in place and everybody has to serve the boss to become a mission-centered organization. And you work on that together and you catch each other and you make games out of catching each other using words like manager. So we have a page, just a simple page of words that matter. And the first practice is, here's the old words we used to use that came out of the factory system. Here's what we need to use going forward because those old words are poisonous and they don't describe who we are. Words matter. So no more managers. We're not going to have an office manager. We're going to have an office leader, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's the first tool. And the second one is distributed decision-making. We have what we call the two-step decision-making process. Very simple, and we teach people how to make decisions, distributed decisions, so that it's completely safe. Nobody's ever out of the loop. It's less chaos and more organized, and you get better decisions with more input than you would in the managed system.
Mm-hmm.
Then you teach people distributed decision making. And then there's a whole bunch of other things we do, like kudos programs. Most kudos programs are top down. Some leader walks into the room and whispers and says, hey, who should I thank for something? And the other person says, well, thank Bob. He did a great job. And they thank Bob, and Bob knows it's all phony. The research shows that when peers recognize peers, it means more to them. And anything, all these tools are designed to take that top-down hierarchy and turn it sideways into peer-to-peer interdependence, a healthy, very healthy thing. So we take codependence and we turn it into side by side. How do I depend on each other? How do we depend on each other and our teammates for the things that the manager used to tell us to do? And in somewhere between 10 or 12 to 18 months, you can turn on an entire organization simply introducing one of these tools at a time and requiring and demanding that people get on board with being adults to the point where they, at some point they look around and say, why is that manager here? And most of the time the managers go back to being productive. They fire themselves and they go back to being productive. Some of them will quit because they have kingdom disease and they want to build fiefdoms.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they're not adding any value and they don't want to be exposed. So, but almost, well, in fact, never do we ever see a downturn in some company's productivity. They immediately go up. And that's the fear is, hey, if I do this thing, I'm going to have all this chaos and anarchy for years or months, and I can't afford that. Nope. never happened. Can't point to an instance where that's ever happened. It's always as soon as you start doing these things, productivity goes up, revenue goes up, profit goes up, retention goes up. So 11 things in here, mapping their processes, tying maps, mm-hmm. metrics to the maps, peer recognition surveys, instead of having stupid annual reviews that every data in the world says is a bad idea and actually makes productivity go down. We do monthly peer recognition surveys in our company. Result-based mm-hmm. incentives, replace all bonuses with results-based incentives. Nobody ever gets anything ever again for sitting in a chair for a year. You get money because you added value.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalist. We turn everybody into a capitalist. So you can see all these things. And then the last one, I skipped a few, but the last one is hiring very differently. If you're going to enter the participation age, you do not hire for skills and experience.
Mm-hmm.
You hire for culture, belief systems, and I'm talking business belief systems, not race, creed, sex, any of that stuff. But what do you believe about work? Why do you want to work? Do you want to work to make meaning? You want to work to make money? What do you believe about business? Why does it exist? We want to see your business beliefs. And then we want to see what your innate talents are that we can't teach. Hire for those two things. And then look at if someone passes that test, then look at their resume. I could go on for hours on this one. I know companies with a few thousand people who never look at resumes anymore.
Makes sense.
They simply test people for culture and talents, and then they have them come in and demonstrate their skills rather than looking at a piece of paper that says, I can do this. So those are the tools of the participation age and a lot more subtle things around that principles, practices, and tools and methodologies that can turn a company around in 12 to 18 months and all the while they're going up.
Yeah, and all the while they're going up, right? And I think, too, like you said, it's intuitive. Once you have the mindset in place, this actually all makes sense. This is very, very, it's intuitive.
It's really important to make sure people understand this is not a gimmick. This is not a silver bullet. This is not a consultant's process that we can come in and run on your people and all of a sudden it works. If you don't believe this stuff,
it's
going to work. Believe it in your heart.
Believe it in your heart. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's not something you add on. It's an actual, I'm hearing it as an actual transformation, literally, in that literal sense of the word. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So everyone has to be on board. And is there either of your books, or I know you write a lot of articles, if someone wanted an overview of this, you know, is there a particular piece that they could read?
Yep.
And get,
they could start with my TED Talk, 15 minutes. And the TED Talk, just Google TEDx. Blakeman Emerging Work World.
Okay.
Or just even Blakeman Emerging Work World and you'll get my TED Talk. So there's 15 minutes. I could put that up on a screen, have everybody look at it and say, what do you think? Mm-hmm. That's a great primer for what it means to enter the participation age. And then the David Marquette's little book, my book, obviously, but there's other, anything I write on Inc., you could Google Inc., Magazine, Chuck Blakeman, and you'll get a list of all my articles. 90% of them are on this stuff, and you could eat one of those every few days and see what you think about it. And start at the beginning, start at the oldest articles that are 4 or so years old, and work your way up to today. And I just cover these concepts one at a time on that as well. So that's a great way for you to get this in bits and bytes. And then we're also developing an online curriculum for this stuff that will also be something you can listen to in your car, 10 to 15 minute videos or audios that will give you this stuff in bits and bytes.
Wow. Well, thanks so much for sharing those resources. I think those are great. You know, I'm sure so many people are intrigued and interested, at least, you know, to learn more, like you said, on this road to either getting it in your heart, right? Or deciding that it's a great potential fit for your organization. So, thank you. So Chuck, thanks so much for this. I mean, really fascinating conversation. I learned a lot. I'm sure listeners learned a lot, and I love the combination of all your research and the statistics you can bring into this, in addition to the passion, right, and the stories and just really painting a picture for us of how this really works. You brought it to life.
Thank you.
So thank you.
It has to be true, or we're not going to be able to do it right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had a really interesting and energizing time. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at claudetterowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.